Okay.
Oh, we are? Okay.
All right. You may want to exit. There you go.
There you go.
Well, all right. Well, anyway, welcome everybody to a kind of an awkward start to Cambridge Inside Out. Yeah. I'm Robert Winters.
Did I not have the right link? What is going on?
Well, we're good now. We're good now.
All right. No matter what. Okay.
All right. So today is December 1st, 2020, in the beautiful town of Cambridge, Massachusetts. And, you know, we have a few things to talk about here tonight. I don't know if I think maybe the first thing I would want to start off with. And by the way, I don't know if Sean is visible, in the image here or not.
You're in the image.
Okay,
no?
We're good. All right.
You usually don't see them, but anyway, that's okay.
All righty. Okay, we're good. All right. So anyway, what I was going to say here was that I just want to start off with acknowledging the passing of Frank Duhay.
Yes.
Frank Duhay passed away maybe about 10 or so days ago. Frank had been a city councilor for, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 36 years, I believe.
Well, he served on the, I mean, he was school committee and then,
That's right, 36 years in elected office, several terms on the school committee and then on the city council all the way through about approximately 1990.
Right.
And was mayor three times. Great guy.
Oh, 97.
It may have been
Because I have that photo of him when he just about end of his term. Okay.
Well, he was actually mayor for the 1998-1999 term.
That's when I got that award.
I think he left at that. And I just wanted to say about that was that I first came in touch with Frank because I didn't really follow politics all that much prior to this. To when we got involved in the recycling program.
Right. He's very pro-environment,
And the thing is that he's actually played a really pivotal role, far more than any other council. I actually, just to give credit where credit is due, Frank Duhay and Sheila Russell, and soon to be then Tim Toomey, were really the most gung-ho pro-recycling people in the early days. Frank actually had a practice of making arrangements with Kennedy School students. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think his name was John Kessler, was the person who put together a program. Well, he had one student who actually proposed some curbside recycling. We actually outdid that and did a much more enhanced program than what was originally proposed.
Yeah.
He had another student named John Kessler who created a plan for a Cambridge environmental program, which the city manager then embraced, ran it right out of the manager's office, and then eventually spun it off into the community development department. And all of this sort of pro-environment, environmental transportation planning, all of those initiatives really grew out of that. And, you know, so, you know, at the head of the stream is Frank Duhay, you know.
I could not find the photo, but I got the award that year for the best recycler of the year. And it's Sheila Russell and Frank Duhay. I'm in a photograph with them and I can't find the photo, but it was very special. Yeah.
So it was there's tough news to take, really. You know, our best wishes to Jane, his wife, who was actually one of our most solid recycling volunteers. I actually knew Jane before I knew Frank. So, it was sort of a tough piece of news to digest.
Yeah.
So, you know, and of course, COVID being what it is, I think there will be some kind of memorial gathering.
That wasn't his passing. It's not due to COVID.
No, it was not. Okay. Not, but the thing is, hopefully sometime next year we'll have some really, really great gathering.
In person, maybe,
Yeah, hopefully in person, too. Yeah. All the, not millions, but so many people that Frank has touched over the years. So, now, meanwhile, back here in our local city, I guess, can we safely say we've now navigated past the presidential election?
I think so. I think today there was just breaking news that William Barr and McConnell both kind of said, hey, I'm paraphrasing, it's over.
Right, it's over. Yeah. Right. I mean, I've heard some ungodly amount of money that has now been raised by the Trump machine.
Have you seen those? My daughter, somehow somebody put her on some text list for Republicans and she was getting all these appeals. And it all
I get them too.
How did you get on that?
I love to see what both sides are really up to.
Oh, but she was getting them on. Well, you don't have a cell phone. She was getting text messages. Ridiculous. I mean, and asking for money basically for campaigns. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, I think he's basically capitalizing what's going to be essentially the anti-president, the anti-presidency campaign that for the next
four years it's like, you know, we couldn't got it seems like every Democrat that gets in office has 4 years of I mean, people will say, well, you did it to Trump, but yeah, so.
Right. So anyway, so, you know, but at least it does seem like we're at least navigating away from the election.
Yes.
And the recounts and the challenges are going on here.
Hopefully.
It didn't come to some big showdown at the Supreme Court, thankfully.
Yeah. No.
Though I'm sure the Supreme Court actually probably would have acted quite honorably in this.
There are a couple of cases that may go there, but I think they're not going to even look at it. Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of moot at this point. So anyway, all attention, not all attention, but a lot of attention then comes back to our, you know, localities here, like, you know,
right.
City of Cambridge. We've had a few controversies in recent days.
Yeah.
I think maybe just to sort of mention first was that 2 weeks ago, I think, or a week and change ago, no, actually more than that now, there was a city council order came in very much at the last minute, having to do with what effectively seemed to be suggesting that from some city councilors, a call to just shut, because the numbers, the COVID numbers had been ticking up.
Oh, right, yeah.
To pretty much just shut everything down.
Right? Well, unless, right.
Right, I think it was like restaurants. I think it would still allow takeout and such like that, but it would have been pretty tough. And it was a very loud reaction from the restaurants and other community.
Public comment, the next meeting, you had people from health clubs, you had people from, representing a lot of different organizations, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, the way that was adjudicated was that it came back, and I'm just checking one little thing here as we do this here. Don't mind my funny sounds. It was adjudicated was that they pretty much it was pitched back to the manager, and the manager said, "Look, unless there was some absolute compelling reason, and the, mm-hmm. or the word comes down from the state, it is not our intention to just completely shut down the Cambridge economy."
Right.
Right. I mean, there was at least some rational basis for some of the desire to do so. I mean, the COVID numbers had most certainly been kicking up lately. There's no question about it.
Right. But in terms of the schools itself, I mean, they were going by a metric for the whole community versus. But
right.
Whatever. Yeah.
And I think Mayor Siddiqui had sort of kind of, I think maybe not so correctly pitched it as sort of like, well, either the schools open or the business
right. Businesses
close.
That's unfortunately the way it was pitched. It was either schools or the businesses. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So anyway, it was a little tough here. I do want to actually do a little quick share of screen here just to point out
please.
Something. Though.
Oh, to look at numbers.
The thing is that the basis for that, again, just to show a few little figures here.
Yeah.
Was that I just have here some of the graphs, you know, from November 1st, November 15th, and then today, and what you can see is a noticeable change in shape of the graph, where when this order was coming out, things were very much kind of in this, heading toward the steepest slope.
Yeah.
Since then, there seems to be at least some
leveling off,
moderation in that, but the numbers are still jumping. They jumped by 40 today, by the way.
Oh.
You know, there was expected to be a post-holiday because it was a little less testing that happened or less reporting.
Oh, maybe that's why, because there was,
I mean,
there is more testing now versus a few days of last week.
Exactly. Probably one of the most disturbing things was, and I don't know if everybody can see this here, but the current cases, had just really, gone from a couple hundred to over 500. You know, so in other words, it wasn't just a matter of, people having been tested, but they had no symptoms, but they were listed as current cases, and they go off of that as they recover.
Okay, does this include universities? Does this include everybody?
Yes, basically anything that's trackable to
Cambridge
residents, yeah.
Oh, okay.
By the way, to me, the more telling graphs have actually been the ones that show the 7-day averages.
Wow.
And until this sort of the latest trouble, we saw this sort of the big thing.
So this is
spring.
March over here. This is March, the beginning.
Yeah. And then it was just leveled. So we were actually under five new cases a day for the longest time. And then it started climbing up about a month ago. And then it really climbed up. You know, even with the averages, it had basically more than quadrupled.
So almost like what it was back in, April.
Yeah. Well, actually, if you look over at today's picture here.
Oh, dear.
It had actually had peaked at averaging over 30 per day for a very short time. It seems to have come down from that. It maybe, I'm going to guess it'll probably kick up a little bit.
Because of Thanksgiving and people traveling.
And then we just, hopefully people can kind of reinstitute some of their discipline.
Well, I mean, it does kind of correspond to warmer weather. People were outside in the summer, more outside. Everything could be done outside. And now as we gradually go indoors, it's inevitable that that's going to happen, I guess.
I think one thing, it's just because Cambridge is a bit of a university town, the summer months are where a lot of the universities are pretty sparse.
True. So are those cases directly tied to universities, though? It's 44 new cases. I'd like to know where those are.
I don't know. I know that the universities were having a sizable number of cases.
Positive.
Higher than originally. When the students first came back, the students seemed to be doing wonderfully. But then there were some, I think people started letting their guards down. People started having gatherings or whatever, and everything started shooting up.
Yeah.
So part of what we might have seen all along, except for the fact that the summer lull of Cambridge was there, did arrive. You know, I'm starting to feel
More people are going out to work. I've gone by, even Cambridge, which everyone is masked, I've gone by restaurants on my walks and walking over into Boston on Sunday. Everybody was in this basement restaurant. It was filled.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying people are saying, you know, okay, I'll wear a mask out here, but I'm still going to, and I think that's what a lot of it is.
Right. So I think there's definitely a call for people to start becoming a little bit more disciplined.
Yeah.
I mean, I still, when I'm walking down the sidewalk, there's still people who will walk like 15 feet away from me, even though everybody on earth is wearing their masks. So I said, well, you know, you don't really have to do that.
It's duration of contact. Come on, people.
Right. So the big problem, I think, is when you have a lot of unmasked people gathering in spaces.
Indoor spaces
primarily.
That are not ventilated, yeah.
Right, but if everybody was at a big kid's soccer game outside, it probably would be problematic, too.
Although those are being controlled, those numbers, too.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right, exactly. I see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just because, you know, if everybody's sort of crowded together, then it's better than being in a closed room.
Yeah.
It's something.
I know. It's so. This is 9 months. 9 months.
Right.
But, I can't believe it. It's going to be a year.
Right. But so much of the news about vaccine development.
I know.
And that now they're actually already working out distribution plans. So
I know. They say
we're getting close to.
I want them to do definitely healthcare workers, but I also want them to do people that live in high density areas, essential workers. I mean, they say older people. Well, you know what? Someone like me, I don't need it right away. I really don't. I mean, I think they need to pay attention to people that really have to be out there in the community.
I think that
teachers, police, firemen, essential workers, frontline workers.
You know, if this was like 50 years ago, it would have been whoever had the most dough. You know, if you got the gelt, you get the vaccine. But the thing is that, and I'm sure some of that's still going to be true, but there's so many eyes on making sure things are done in a kind of an equitable way I think the government, even in the current administration, the people who are actually laying out the plans here have a tremendous obligation to try and
is going to make their own deals with the vaccine companies, right? I think that's the way it is.
It may be so, but I think there is a certain amount of planning here, you know, to at least try to do this.
And you know it's going to be two doses. It's not one.
You know, I actually was thinking about that the other day because I thought to myself, you know, especially in light of the discussion about restaurants possibly having to curtail activities and whatever.
Yeah.
I thought to myself, you know, here's an idea. Because it is a two-dose, a two-shot arrangement. So here's my proposal.
Uh-oh.
What you do is you say, this is crazy, right? But I don't think it's actually crazy.
Yeah.
So here's the idea is you go there and you say, you get your first shot.
Yeah.
And then when you do that, you fill out the paperwork, they take a picture and they start making up a card. And then when you come back, whatever the duration is, you get your nice laminated card, which gives you entry into any restaurant of your choice.
Which can be duplicated. I heard a story about this.
Well,
yeah. How do you prove that? All right,
I know.
So, what's
if there was a way of doing that in a secure way, then what you could do is actually give people a tremendous incentive to go get that vaccine, because it would then permit you to actually participate in.
Yeah, I think it should be a barcode on a phone. And I know you don't have one, Robert, but most people do, even low income people or whatever. So I think if it's a barcode, it's less duplicatable or whatever, because it's right to you.
But if they could come up with some way, at least some protocol that basically said that if you can prove vaccination, then you have certain freedoms that other people might not have. And then that would give incentives for people to, you know.
Yeah, you have restaurant people and people saying are going to have to play police and let's see your card.
They got to do that now anyway, because they got to say you can't enter.
Well, they say wear a mask. Yeah.
And you say wear a mask. And of course, we've heard some really horrible stories of people, you know, gunshots go out here because somebody told somebody to wear a mask. Yeah, but it's a big country. Yeah.
They do good restaurants, or they're taking down names. So at least they know if there's an outbreak, they can contact whoever was in that restaurant on that day. I mean, that's what was recommended that, you know.
I think that's happening in kind of a, as you say, with the iPhone world. Because people have to make reservations.
Not just iPhone, it's a smartphone, okay?
Smartphone, whatever you call it, right?
We can't do without it, phone. Come on. You don't go anywhere. Don't show me whatever you've got.
There's my smartphone.
Yeah, but you're not reachable all the time, okay?
I know, it's true.
You do have an iPad. I have to remind people of that. He's not totally out of, because that is very transportable.
Yes.
And do you know that some people get cell phone calls and texts on it? You can pay a little extra a month to get it on your iPad. Did you know that?
Actually, you can not only that, but I could get cell phones and text messages sent, because you can do it through Google. There's actually something called Google Talk.
I'm just saying it would be nice. Sometimes it's nice to say, well, where are you? And you text it instead, because you can't call you. But anyway.
Yeah, when I had to have some drain work done on my house, actually, the person I was in touch with, he kept saying, well, just give me your phone number, so I'll text you. And I go, oh, you can't do that.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of figure out a way to make him do that.
You better, because you better still do that. You have to come up with what people
expect. I know. I have to make a compromise with the world. It's terrible. It's terrible. So another thing that's kind of big news, and something I think we'll sort of talk, I think, at length about here, is that so after they resolved to some degree, or at least basically pitched it back to the manager, the question of whether the businesses versus schools false.
Well, it was supposed to. He's in weekly meetings with this Metro managers thing, and it said that based on they want a regional approach.
It's the only one who makes sense.
Input. Right, because people come in and out of the city.
Right, know, and if they shut down the restaurants in one city, people say, where are you going to go? I want to go out for dinner. You go over to Somerville, right?
Right.
So, so that just wouldn't have worked. Right. By the way, one observation I made, which I'm not really saying this is necessarily an indictment or anything like that, but, you know, the city council, you know, they're having their weekly updates about this from the manager and the public health people, whatever. But it occurred to me, you know, and I think I wrote about this a little bit in my latest edition of Snarky Comments on the Civic Journal. It was that, the City Council actually has a committee, subcommittee called the Committee on Health and the Environment.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Right.
So why aren't they talking about health?
Right. So they have met trees. Four times, and all I've talked about is basically trees and net zero. Yeah. Yeah. And I thought to myself, well, okay, so you guys really got no right to be complaining to the city manager, because you're not really creating a forum to kind of like orchestrate the city council's thoughts on matters of health, other than basically, you know, shouting questions from the floor at the manager at those updates.
But maybe given this pandemic, though, it's so big that there is a city, you know, the advisory committee on COVID health, they meet with the schools, but there has been the complaint from the council that they don't get enough minutes. They don't get any minutes, or not timely minutes.
But if they had been having,
Well, what would that do?
I think it would have been, you know, as opposed to the sort of the big showdown Monday night thing, it would have been a vehicle through which they could have just been freely exchanging information on this stuff all along. you know, rather than sort of showing on a Monday saying, Mr. Manager, how come you're not providing us updates, you know? They could have actually created a mechanism for doing that.
Well, that's interesting. We'll see if there's, if anyone's watching this or will watch this, whether there's any feedback about why that didn't happen or if it's just not in their area, whatever. But yeah, it's a good point.
Well, there's another question. There's another committee basically on economic development. It's actually technically economic development and university relations.
Right.
And, you know, one of the biggest local impacts about COVID, other than just fear and health, is just the economic impact, you know, in the restaurant community and how many businesses are.
Yeah, everybody.
If businesses aren't going into, quote, hibernation, they're outright closing.
Right.
You know, and, you know, so that's a pretty big thing in terms of, you know, I guess economic development maybe suggests about developing new economic stuff as opposed to maintaining existing. But I don't think that's really what it means. I think it's basically the local economy.
Well, that's why they took up the whole vacant storefront.
Right. But, you know, there is something kind of disquieting for me, at least, saying, well, we're gonna, let's develop a vacant storefront policy. Mm-hmm. But let's not have many meetings at all. Well, they did have one about the universities, but let's not have any meetings on preventing vacancies by saying what are the best things that we can do to help a local economy get through all of this. I mean, I know that people associated with the Central Square bid have basically been kind of on their own inventing the solutions. In fact, a lot of the ideas that have been floated coming through city councilors really were just invented by the business community in Central Square.
Well, but I mean, why not them? I mean, yes, the economic, I just feel like it maybe just shows you the limitations of what the council really can do anyway.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you about that, is that, well, maybe, you know, some of them are clamoring for charter change right now so they can kind of, you know, be all even more important, I think. But
I don't think it would necessarily make them more important, but.
I think that some of them will love that.
Being elected mayor, you know? Please.
Yeah. I think that it would, you know, rather than, you know, have these sort of, you know, on the fly orders that pop up from seemingly nowhere. If there had been at least something more of an ongoing conversation where they could actually have a council meeting for 2 hours with some staff people, as opposed to kind of a rush job at some of these.
Or bringing in some of the business associations, talking, just having how about a round table? A round table with
the business representatives.
Because my knowledge, that should happen.
I don't believe there's been a single official gathering of the city council at the city council level where business people were really involved. They came in reaction to orders.
That's a good point.
Shutdowns, but it's purely reactive on their part. You know,
you're right. Well, you've heard it first here. Roundtable. We've had one on schools. We've had them on, you know, it's very important, but it's all related. And
right. But I've long felt that city council committees should be much more like active working committees who basically.
I agree, and not have the aides necessarily tied to one councilor, but have them tied to a committee.
See what happens.
And that'll never happen. But
I testified.
Unfortunately, I know
I testified
you did.
To I that it. Effect at a government relations.
I know.
That committee report will soon come back, I presume, to the city council. I wonder if anybody will respond to what I suggested there at all. My suggestion is that if any of them took seriously the notion that staff should be assigned to the committees rather than to the councilors, the city council reaction will be, okay, well, let's just hire even more staff so that we can have our personal staff and the committees can have staff. Rather than give up anything, you know, so.
Do charters go to that level? Like when you have a charter of a government, you know, a municipal government, would it go to that level? Like,
not really, no.
No, so this is just add-ons, like the aides and all that are just things that develop over the years.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think of the aides in conjunction with the discussion of charter change only because so many city councilors keep making this assertion that somehow the job has changed a lot since 1940. And I'm not so convinced that that's really true.
Uh-huh. So, right. So we have two minutes left for our break.
All right.
So I will let you know. So so we should talk definitely in the next segment about the neighborhood groups
Yes.
It's also been quite a brouhaha.
Actually, one thing I'd say, just sort of on the health, not COVID specific, but just to mention it quickly.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I have it posted up on the Civic Journal website right now. It was a city press release, basically from the emergency management, emergency communications people, basically giving a protocol where if people want to actually put what they call a health profile together, so that if there was ever an emergency that and they had to send out an ambulance to someone's home, you would actually have all of this stuff on record so they would have immediate access to if there were allergies or other kinds of...
Well, I have that with my health provider, with my health online, but I don't
Right, but the thing is they're just providing a way which so if something involved emergency services.
This is on your site?
Or I put it up there today. It's also on the city site as well.
Okay, so that should come in.
It's kind of nice to actually sort of see those kinds of initiatives. They're very practical in my view.
Although some people might think it's an invasion of privacy, but that's...
Mention in the press release some concerns about making sure that that shouldn't be really...
But if anyone has a smartphone other than you, they know they're already a being whatever.
All right. So all right. We'll be taking a break in a couple of seconds here.
Well, seconds. We have 20 seconds.
So, 20 seconds. But when we return, we want to talk a little bit about the current controversy, which was a big thing about having to do with neighborhood associations. Yes. I'd like to offer some historical perspective. And we'll
You definitely have institutional memory.
Anyway, we'll see you soon on Cambridge Inside Out.
Okay.